Giants and Jets mercifully put an end to this NFL season. The Giants, a whopping 3-14 record. The Jets, with so much optimism coming into the year, finish at 5-12. To talk about it, a little post-mortem NFL style, we bring in Ryan Dunleavy from the New York Post, NFL reporter and writer. Ryan, how are you? Welcome back to the program.
Good, Lori. How are you doing?
Doing just fine. Well, first big picture, in all the years that you've been covering, where does this rank in terms of the combined awfulness between the Giants and Jets? Is this season the low point?
I mean, it feels like it because I'm in the moment, but there's so many bad ones. I mean, there was actually a year where a couple years ago, maybe the year Adam Gase's last year.
Oh, that was bad.
Which might have been Joe Judge's first. There was a year where I think the Jets won 2 and the Giants won 4, maybe.
Yeah, the Fromm Glennon like kind of Judge year. That was bad. Yeah, it's true. I guess there's a recency bias that I have in mind where I just think this one seems dreadful.
There was more this year. This year had the planes for the Giants and the craziness with the Jets firing Saleh way too soon and then firing Douglas. There was just more happening this year. Usually it's just losses. This year was losses and, you know,
drama.
Losses and drama and everything the Giants touched that didn't touch went wrong. Saquon, McKinney, you know.
Hard knocks,
couldn't do anything
wrong. All of it.
Yeah,
you know, it's funny.
From
you say everything went wrong. So my advice to John Mara two weeks ago on my show, my advice as he approaches the off season was the same that Jerry Seinfeld had given to George. Whatever you think, do the opposite. Because obviously it seems to be going wrong. But you tell me. Well, let's start off with from what you're hearing, thinking. We'll start off with your prediction of what will John Mara do, and then we can talk about what he should do. But so what are you thinking John Mara will do as far as general manager and head coach?
As far as I know, from all my reporting from weeks until hours ago, Joe Shane has very little to worry about. Joe Shane will be back as the general manager as far as I know, barring something drastic changing. You know, these things are never 100% until they are. But I'd be very surprised if they make a change at general manager, and that fits the Giants' MO. Going back decades, they're very patient with their GMs. And then Brian Daboll, it's a little bit tricky. I mean, up until they beat the Colts, I thought people had told me he was kind of, you know, a dead man walking. You saw all the reports, including in ours paper, the Post, that they weren't a package deal. That was certainly messaging getting out on purpose from somewhere. And then they beat the Colts. I take zero stock in that, but some people do. And then it started to, you start to hear, well, maybe this, maybe that, maybe there's effort. Maybe that, well, they cost themselves a quarterback pick, so it's a less desirable job. You see people trying to reason their way into Brian Daboll staying. I'd say it's still a coin flip. He's going to have a meeting either late tomorrow night or early Tuesday with John Mara, where he has to explain what went wrong. And from my reporting, what I tell you is he better not go in there and just say, we're a quarterback away. Let's blame everything on the quarterback. He's going to have to take some culpability as a play caller and as the head coach. He can't just say it's all not having a quarterback and we'll be fixed. That will not fly.
Yeah, when I look at Brian Daboll, if I'm going to be fair about the whole thing, I see the guy who coached reasonably well, obviously was coach of the year in his first season. And I also see the guy who could not handle higher expectations and adversity last year. I fought with his own coordinator in Wink Martindale, and that obviously ended really poorly. And has at times looked too emotional on the sidelines this year as a play caller, getting upset about a pre-snap penalty and losing his cool when you should be actually having a calm conversation with your quarterback in the headset and move on to the next play. And so I look at Dable and wonder, you know, of course they're never going to turn to Tom Coughlin as a mentor and advisor, but that Dable needs to, you know, just like Tom Coughlin to keep his job back, you know, so many years ago before the Super Bowls, had to have a conversation with John Mara and talk about, take some kind of responsibility and how he was going to look in the mirror and make some changes in terms of his communication style. Are those some of the things that you anticipate, you know, to your point, Brian Dable, it's not just, hey, I need a quarterback, I can be better. Look, Drew Lock scored 45 points against the Colts. That are those the things that John Mara needs to hear from Brian Dable if he's going to keep the job?
I mean, John Mara talked to Brian Dable about being easier to work with after last offseason. So I don't know that that message needs to be reiterated. I think he was probably, I mean, I think this staff, you definitely didn't hear as much of that stuff as you did when Wink was there. And let's be clear, Dable was not the only one at fault. Mm-hmm. Wink shared the blame. Wink's personality shared the blame in that. So I think he was. I mean, you don't want to take away too much of the stuff. Like, I mean, he is a fiery, emotional guy. And that, I mean, that works for, you know, we don't criticize winning coaches when they're fiery and emotional. It's just he doesn't win enough, right? Like, the things he needs to explain are like, what are his fourth down decisions? There's no consistency with that whatsoever. When he goes for it, when he doesn't, why couldn't they score more? Why did he pass over Drew Lock for Tommy DeVito and then suddenly realize Tommy DeVito was not as good as Drew Lock and then start Drew Lock the final 4 days? Like, where are his evaluations? Why is Josh Azudu playing guard today when for 2 years they've insisted he's a tackle? They needed a tackle. They didn't play him. They played him a tackle for one game, and then he played guard again today. Like, you denied he was a guard for 2 years. Now he's playing guard. Like, why can I figure that out before you can figure that out? So his evaluations, they've consistently put guys in positions to fail, him and Joe Shane on the field. So, like, they have a lot of explaining to do about their evaluations and just, the development of young players. This draft class looked promising, but why hasn't anybody from 2022 or 2023 lived up to the billing?
Talking to Ryan Dunleavy from the New York Post. All right, so you mentioned Joe Shane there, and if you were John Mara or a Giant fan, what has Joe Shane done that would give you confidence that he should be the guy, that his player evaluation skills are good enough to keep this job, and in particular have a top three pick that now might be making an evaluation on whether they draft a quarterback there or not, and which one?
Nothing. I mean, I can't say it any more clearly. Right. He's done nothing. Like,
yep.
Like, he had a good 2024 draft. Not an incredible, nobody made the Pro Bowl. He hasn't added a Pro Bowl player to the roster via mm-hmm. draft, free agency, or trade in 3 years. He's done nothing to the roster's younger. It's not any better than the roster.
No, it's worse. It's less talented.
I'd argue it's worse.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's really done nothing. And then I guess you could say he maybe has fixed the salary cap or behind the scenes stuff. No one wants to hear about nobody cares about
the thing with Shane that I think what I've seen is the stuff he's fixed, I think, are the kinds of things that a really good lieutenant or number two does. You know, great sports science, infrastructure, analytics. But a GM has to evaluate talent. And that's the part that I'm not confident in.
I just think there's stuff that any 41 or 42-year-old guy following a dinosaur, a technology dinosaur like Dave Gettleman would have fixed. I mean, there are things that anybody of his generation, I think, would have fixed. So, you mentioned quarterback specifically, Lori. So his quarterback evaluations have been to re-sign Daniel Jones, which for the 10 millionth time was his decision, not forced upon him.
Right.
They
lost Tyrod Taylor. Yep, lost him.
Then to sign Tyrod Taylor to play to lose Tyrod Taylor, to sign Drew Lock as your backup quarterback, then to not think Drew Lock was good enough, to pass over all of the quarterbacks in last year's draft, including Bo Nix, who looks fantastic,
or Michael Penix Jr. Yep,
who became a starter. So, like, his quarterback evaluation, he hasn't gotten any right so far. So, I don't know why you would think he's going to get this one right, just because he got Neighbors and Wright and Tyrone Tracy looks like a good pick, and you know, some of the ones, Drew Phillips looks like a good pick. But that doesn't mean you're going to get the quarterback right. There's plenty of GMs out there who are great at evaluating every position but quarterback.
Yeah, and, you know, for, okay, it was a solid draft class, you know, to your point this year, yes. But Deontay Banks, you know, Schmitz, you know, we can go down the roster of last year's draft class, even if you want to excuse his first draft class and say, well, it wasn't his scouts or whatever. That doesn't excuse the second draft class.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah, I understand. I would agree with you on that. But also, there's no excuse for the second year, which was also really bad. And so, anyways, here we are. You know what? I figured it's only fair to let you take a victory lap on Saquon Barkley, where I may not personally still, we can still have a difference of opinion on how much money to spend on running backs who are, you know, older and injury prone. And I think we would both agree that there's no universe under which Saquon Barkley would play the way he did behind the Giants offensive line with the Giants play calling and talent the way he did with the Eagles. God bless him. But the question I have for you is, what does it say about Saquon Barkley that he chose to sit today, not go for the single season rushing record, and just prioritize, you know, the Eagles as a team and you know, being healthy to play with his team for the playoffs over trying to go for a record?
Yeah, I mean, he left that up to his coach. I mean, I think he would have played if the coach wanted him to play. Lori, I think you know this as well as I do. I don't know, every listener knows this. Not every professional athlete is a historian the way you and I and fans are. They don't know the history of their team or their game. They're great athletes. Saquon Barkley is a historian. His name being atop the record books would have meant a lot to him. So I think he definitely would have played, but he said other people in his position might have thrown a tantrum when the coach said, I don't want you to play, and he certainly didn't. I think I know him well enough to know that winning a championship is what really matters to him. So he will try to set the all-time rushing record held by Terrell Davis for combined regular season and playoff rushing yards. So that's a number that's on his mind that he can now accomplish by adding his playoff totals. And to do that, obviously, he would need to play in three playoff games, which means he's going to the Super Bowl, which is his number one priority. And don't sell short. I agree with you, Lori. He would not be anywhere near 2,000 yards here. The Giants would not be a playoff team with him here. But as I wrote for the Post this week, and I quoted a couple of locker room sources with the Giants, it's not just that they missed his rushing yard. This team had very little leadership, especially as injuries mounted and guys disappeared. I think they were playing with just one captain for the final six or seven games. Like, they missed him in the locker room during tough times incredibly much.
And I also think that guys like Malik Neighbors, well, they wouldn't have, you know, I guess it all would have been different. But yeah, the young players, they, you know, whether it's a Malik Neighbors and some of those guys could have used that level of leadership of a Saquon. Last question on the Giants before we do a quick flip to the Jets is, in hindsight, how big a mistake was it that the Giants wanted to avoid the regular training camp version of Hard Knocks and instead wanted to do sort of the special offseason version that showed their thinking on the draft, on quarterbacks, and Saquon?
I mean, I think it was an enormous mistake. It goes back to what we were joking about when I first came on. Like, if they can make the wrong decision, they make the wrong decision. It's their Murphy's Law. It's Mara's Law right now, where they just, whatever can go wrong goes wrong. I know their heart was in the right place. I know what they were thinking.
Yep.
I know they thought it'd be a good behind the scenes look. I know that it they want, the reason they don't like doing, didn't want to do the summer one is they thought it'd be a distraction from the team that takes away from winning. Mm-hmm. When in hindsight, letting HBO's cameras spend the day with some 68th guy on your roster who has no chance of making your team, maybe the practice squad, is really not going to affect the team at all. Whereas revealing your exact thinking and having quotes that, you know, blow up in your face all season when people see that you weren't really invested in Daniel Jones and you underestimated Saquon Barkley, it just ended up being a much, much, much worse. It was great for us. We got to see how a team thinks, but yep. considering literally everything they decided went the other way, it was not a good opportunity. Did not cast them in a good light, particularly the GM.
And the interesting thing there with John Mara, because I know fans obviously now flying planes and Jet fans obviously don't like or frustrated with their owner. Giants fans are frustrated with their owner. The interesting thing with John Mara is that, you know, and you obviously are closer to it, but my sense is he cares deeply. He tries hard and he's tried a bunch of different ways of doing this. Now, continuing to keep a GM and get off cycle with GMs and head coaches doesn't seem like a winning strategy to me. That's failed a number of times. I think he would learn from that. But it does seem like even in the process of hiring Shane and Dable, it made sense what they did. It just hasn't worked out. And so I wonder, your thoughts on John Mara, it doesn't seem to me like, it's not like he's a terrible owner per se, as much as it just has, for one reason or another, every hiring decision he's made has not worked out.
Correct. When I think of bad owners in sports, I think of people who don't want to spend money, like the way the Wilpons stopped spending money on the Mets. That's not John Mara. They go on huge spending sprees, like every two or three years. They dominate free agency. That might be what's about to come right now if Joe Shane's staying. So it's not that they don't want to spend money. It's not that they're consistently okay with just like lining their pockets. No, they overhaul the coach. They overhaul the GM. This kind of coach didn't work, we're going to try this kind of coach. This GM didn't work, we're going to try this GM. Oh, everybody thinks I'm too involved, I'll back out of the process and let Joe Shane do everything. And then Joe Shane makes all the mistakes. So, like, he's tried everything you can possibly try. So, no, I don't think he's a bad owner. I think he wants to win as bad as fans. It's the family business. He's just made a lot of really bad decisions. Like, does that mean he doesn't care? Does that mean he's not trying? No, I mean, I think he's trying. He's just, you know, he's just right now, he's just not doing a good job in his job, which is owning the team.
Yeah, he's on a big losing streak in terms of making decisions.
Yeah, he's doing a bad job.
Yeah.
If you could fire an owner, he'd be fired.
Yeah.
But you can't.
Maybe you need to bring somebody else in as a consultant to help you. In terms of the Jets and prediction time there, do you think Aaron Rodgers will be back with the Jets?
I'd put it like 10%. You know what he says. He wants mm-hmm. to go to his darkness for a month and think about it and all. I mean, I don't think he wants to retire. That's not the feeling I get asking people around the league who know Aaron Rodgers a lot better than I do. I don't think he wants to retire. I don't necessarily think he wants to come back to the Jets either, but, you know, that depends on who the GM and the coach are. They might not want him back. I don't think anybody knows that. I think he'd like to get to a win-now situation. I don't think the Jets will be a win-now situation next year. So I think he's probably played his last game as a Jet, but he's going to need to realize wherever he is, he's probably mentoring a rookie. He's going to have to play really well to keep that rookie on the bench. Like, it's not going to be what it was in 2018 or even what it was at the start of this year for Aaron Rodgers.
And what are you hearing about Mike Vrabel? I mean, it would seem like now with the opening in New England that he's going to be the next Patriots head coach. Is that what you're thinking? He chooses the Pats over the Jets?
Look, I'm not going to lie to you. I have not made a single Mike Vrabel call today since the Patriot job opened. I was in Philly, obviously. Mm-hmm. Last week, what was I hearing? I was hearing people say, half the people told me that I talked to in coaching circles said, oh, I think he's really interested in the job. That's a job you know, there, it looks like they might be willing to hire him before the GM. That's what something he's going to want to do, have stay in his GM. You don't know how many teams will do that. So, like, yeah, he might really be interested in the Jets. Then the other half of the people were saying he's probably using the Jets to leverage the Patriots. Like, what? How could he get the Patriots to create an opening? Not tell them I'm going to the Bears. Tell them I'm really interested in the Jets. That's why right. The Jets are my first interview. Mm-hmm. That's why my first interview. And then cause the crafts to panic and make a move. And that's where he really wants to be. So, I don't know. Half the people tell you one thing. Half the people tell you the other thing. Push comes to shove. What do I believe? I believe he'll probably be the next coach of the Patriots.
Yeah, it makes sense as a quarterback there. Last one then, finally. Is Rex Ryan a serious candidate for the Jets? How serious?
I'd be very surprised. I mean, they're going to give him an interview. He obviously wants it. Tannenbaum's involved. Tannenbaum hired him the first time, right? So what I would say to you is this. Ben Johnson's not going to come to the Jets. We just said Vrabel probably is more likely to go to the Patriots. You're going to run out of good candidates, I think, this cycle very quickly. Like, I don't think this is a great hiring cycle. Maybe Pete Carroll's a good coach to come back at 73. I don't know that he's for a long-term build like the Jets. He might be better for the Bears, who have a better roster, or the Cowboys. Maybe Mike McCarthy opens. I just think it's not a great cycle of coaches, especially assistant coaches beyond Ben Johnson. So, like, if the Jets are sitting there as the odd one out, is like four of the best candidates want four other jobs, and they're the like job no one really wants. Could they hire Rex Ryan to like throw the fan base a bone because he really wants it? And like, oh look, we got a guy who really cares about our Jets. That I think would be possible if they're like the odd man out in a game of musical chairs, then I could see Rex Ryan. So I can't totally dismiss it because I do think the Jets are probably Jets, Raiders, Giants are probably the three least desirable of the jobs that are about to open, all for different reasons because the Jets have more talent than the other two teams.
It will be interesting. We live in interesting times, as you said, this season, a season of losing, but a season of drama. For the Jets and the Giants. Ryan Dunleavy does a great job covering the NFL for the New York Post. You should be following him. Ryan, thanks for the time. Catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Lori.